few minutes is a thing to talk about Shishi of Hazinu and maybe Shishi of Zos Sabracha. Morty was bringing up some interesting points that would have been interesting maybe to discuss Slichus a little bit. There's always a lot of fascinating topics to talk about, but at this juncture with most of Slichus behind us, it's a little bit of an awkward time to focus on that specifically. But okay, next year, God willing, there's always what to come back to. But for now, let's try to get a little bit about Shishi of these next two parashios. In terms of Hazinu, so it's a very short Shishi again, but it's pretty intense. So maybe we'll just first spend a few minutes talking about Hazinu, about the parasha itself, the unique nature of the parasha. In a lot of ways, it is a parasha that is distinct from kemat every other parasha in the Torah. It has an independent identity, which is unique, and seems to be actually identified in the previous week's parsha, because the Torah refers in Vayelech, the end of Chamishi actually, to writing down a shir, and references in Shishi also, if you recall last week, to the shir, and that shir seems to be a reference to Hazinu. Hazinu, as we know, is written as a shir, is written in a song format, although its content is not exactly cheerful. We'll talk about that in a moment. But we see on the surface how it's a shir. When the Torah says in Vayelech, V'ato kisru lachan, that's a shir hazos. So there's a little bit to figure out, or a lot to figure out, about what exactly is the reference, because we understand that practically to be the mitzvah of ksiva sefer Torah, of the entire content of the Torah. The Rambam, I'm not going to focus on this at great length because it's a whole other topic, but the Rambam understands the progression from one to the other. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that this is a mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah, but the Rambam explains that as really focused on Hazinu, that's the shira that the Torah is talking about. But once we have to write down Hazinu, so you can't just write down Hazinu by itself, you have to write down the whole Torah. So that becomes a mitzvah to write down the whole Torah, Agav Hazinu. Hi. So that's the Kasha, the Shagasari, many others try to figure out on the Rambam. It's a big discussion. Again, it's a little bit outside of our very limited scope today, so we won't be able to give it full attention, but just be aware, it's certainly a major question. Mezuzah and tefillin, there are certainly times where... Sota, it comes up a little less often, hopefully, but there are certainly times when we do... when we do write a small section of the Torah, what's the difference there? It's not... Even if you want to say that that's only because the Torah specifically tells us to, so that would seem to apply here too, that the Torah is specifically saying to... So it's not an easy question to answer, especially according to the Rambam, because the Rambam actually had a concept of chumashim. Chumashim meaning not the printed chumashim that we have today, but of having a scroll separate for each chumash, for each section of the Torah. So at least you should be able to just write Dvar, and not have to write all the chumashim chumash Torah. So it's a lot to discuss about how Hazinu becomes to represent the whole Torah, but that's also a topic we'll have to just put on the table for maybe a future discussion. But the language of Shira is notable. Ramban writes that it's always said as a Shira. The Rambam in Hilchos Tefillin, Perek Zayin, Halacha Gimel, the Rambam does write that there are places where every day they recite the Shira of Hazinu, and that maybe that's why it's identified as a Shira. The language Shira, which we identify as kind of a cheerful idea, Eidon of Shira Shira El Mitoch Simcha, here doesn't seem to have that connotation. Indeed, in the Sefer Paris Yosef Achadosh, it quotes a interpretation of Shira as Lashon Tsar, as this is a unpleasant type of recitation. In the Sefer Mincha Belula, he writes that the idea of Shira here is Milashon Ashirenu. This is a pasuk in Parshas Balak, if I'm not mistaken. And there it's used to mean a prediction for the future, and that's the idea, that the Hazinu represents a vision of what's to come, and it's called Shira for that reason, the Lashon HaShiranu, from the language of a prediction. And the Sefer Ksava Kabbalah, he has the idea that Shir is Miloshin Yashar, that that's where the word comes from, and that's what we're talking about. And this represents a straight path, and the Parseis of Achadosh again also quotes an interpretation that the idea of Shira, which we normally see positively, is that if we read these Nevuahs and we're careful to try to avoid the problems, so that's why it's cheerful. This is, instead of having to actually go through the Tzaros, we'll read about them and that will save us from them. He uses the example, which is not a perfect comparison, of Torah Ola. You know, nowadays we can't bring a Korban Ola, so we study Ola. So it's coming a little bit backwards. Then we say we want to do the mitzvah, but we can't, so we learn about it instead. Here we're coming from the other direction. We don't want the reality to play out, so we can read about it to avoid the reality. And therefore, yes, that's more cheerful than the alternative. So perhaps called Shira for that reason. So another component that is really unique about Hazinu is that the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Lamed Aleph, the Gemara tells us that there is a specific direction for how the parasha is supposed to be divided up. And that the first six aliyahs, first six aliyahs are indicated by an acrostic, Haziv Lach, Hey Zayin Yud Vav, Lamed Chaf. That's a way to give you an indication of where the aliyahs should be broken up. So that would be very helpful, except that we know that the Hey stands for Hazinu, and that's about as far as we get, because after that, there are no fewer than six opinions in the Rishonim how exactly those letters should be allocated. If you take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah, in Parakut Gimel, so he has a certain way of saying it. You can look as well in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch is in Tav Chav Ches, Sif Hei, has also various sheets there, so it's not as helpful as it could be. And that's a problem. Rav Soloveitchik is quoted in Nefesh HaRav as maintaining that this is true during the week as well. Not just on Shabbos, but during the week you have to read it with this particular breakdown, which is only going to work according to some of the shitas, as Rav Shamshon Falhirsch points out. Not every shita is going to work because you'll be left with aliyahs that are not the right length if you're applying it during the week also. But the reason the Rav said this is because he understood that it's a din in Kichsava, that you have to read the Torah the way it's written, and that this is how it has to be done. So anytime you read the Torah, it has to be done this way. The Gemara itself indicates that it was done this way in the Beis HaMikdash, and they sang this year in the Beis HaMikdash, that's how it was broken up. But this is the Rav's Nakuda, that it's a din in Kichsava, and therefore, since the Torah has to be written in Kichsava, has to be read in Kichsava, so therefore, even during the week, this happens to be against the Ramah. The Ramah quotes the Mordechai and Yishar Knesset Gedola that it doesn't apply during the week. It means that the Torah was written in a specific format, and therefore the reading has to reflect that. So this breakdown is kind of inherent in the text. And
otherwise, I'm not sure of other parsha.
So that's, again, the unique nature of Hazinu, that it's a Shira, and it's a Shira with a specific tempo and with a specific breakdown, and that is going to be undone if you're going to do it differently. We'll say more about the possible implications of that in a minute. So, in any event, it's also interesting, just parenthetically, the idea that there's an acrostic here of Haziv Lach, so is that simply just taking the letters and putting them together, or should we read anything into that? So Ziv is really splendor, is to glow. So Rabbeinu Bachaya writes that we're asking for that to come back. Haziv Lach, we want the splendor to come back to us. Marsha writes over there that this is a remez to the glow that Moshe Rabbeinu had, his ziv. And there's an interesting idea, this is a couple steps removed already, by Rav Moshe Wolfson in his Emunah Sitecha. So he compares it to an esrog, because Ziv is essentially the same thing as Hadar. Right? So when we talk about an Esrog is identified in the Torah as pre-Eitz Hadar. And the Gemara suggests that Hadar doesn't just mean beautiful, but it should be read also Hadar, that it is a fruit that is dar, that lives on the tree from one season to the next, meaning that it's able to survive throughout the year through various seasons. That's the symbolism of the Esrog. So therefore, Haziv Lach is evocative of the Hadar. So again, a couple steps removed. It's evocative of the Hadar of the Esrog. And the message is that we survive through all the seasons. The Jew is able to persevere, and that's inherent in the Esrog and apparently in the theme of Hazinu as well. Now, the Rambam also writes in Hilchos Tefillah that normally when you have an aliyah and a breakdown in aliyah, we try to end on a positive note. Here in Hazinu, that doesn't seem to be a requirement, and the Rambam writes that because it's Tochacha, so we're not makbid on this. And that apparently the idea seems to be, again, that the positive impact of the Tochacha will justify it being the tone here. And Rav Nosson Gestetner comments in his Sefer that we're really looking for Tshuva Me'ava here, as we mentioned, I think, yesterday, the concept of Tshuva Me'ava. So, therefore, yes, ultimately the promise that things will be turned around, that's enough to justify it being the place where we stop and the message that gets left. So now just to go back in terms of the point of Kichsava and how built in it is to the text. So it's interesting, I copy down here that Rav Shamshon Fall Hirsch has a notation, he actually has it in our aliyah. He uses this to explain specifically Shishi, that he comments that the structure of Haziv Lach is a structure which divides the parasha up into various themes, and again he uses that specifically appropriately for us to explain Shishi and the breakdown that he has. If you want to take notes of this, he says verses 1 to 6 speak of God and of the general and special orientation of his rule towards the world and towards Israel. Verses 7 to 12 deal with Israel, its destiny, and its origins. Verses 13 to 18 tell of Israel's prosperity and of its sins during periods of prosperity. Verses 19 to 26 describe Israel's downfall as a result of these sins. Verses 27 to 35 explain the purpose of Israel's dispersion among the nations as an admonition to them. And verses 36 to 43 tell of Israel's restoration and afford an insight into the future of Israel and the nations. So that's his understanding, that there's a very distinct structure at Hazinu in terms of its themes, and that the Gemara is saying, here's where the breakdown should be, assuming that we know which of the different interpretations that is, but within this one assessment, that that's the message, that there is this thematic structure to Hazinu, which we try to preserve. So again, he uses that davka to explain our aliyah, which is the last part of that. The last part of that structure, it's only the first six aliyahs which are covered by this whole scenario. So it's Shishi, which is this tail end of this. Again, Israel's restoration and an insight into the future of Israel and the nations. So now let's look at the actual words of the aliyah. So here, first there's a language of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Ki Esa El Shamayim Yodi V'Amarti Chai Anochi Li'olam. So what does that mean? What do you think that means? Ki Esa El Shamayim Yodi. So what's the symbolism of I lift my hand up to the sky?
Kind of like a tzaka.
Tzaka, that's interesting. Okay, so the language, most of Rishonim see it as a language of Shvuah. That's why Rabbeinu Bechaya and the Ramban and others point to it, that it's a language of an oath. But what's a little funny about it?
Like who?
Sorry?
God? Maybe.
Yeah, it's God, right? So for a human being to say, I point to Shemayim, you know, by God's word I will do this, you know, you're trying to evoke God's presence. So for God himself to point to Shemayim is a hard idea to understand. What exactly is the message there? So this is something various commentaries talk about. The Ramban understands that it's more like Nikita's Chayfetz, that it's about the same way somebody takes the Shavuah, so they hold the Sefer Torah in their hand, something like that. Or even in the secular context, somebody goes to court, they take an oath, they swear on a Bible. So there's an idea of Nikita Stefitz in Halacha. So too, God is kaviyachal holding on to the Shemayim and saying, I am swearing with it. If you look also, the Sefer is Nayim Latari, you can find it downstairs. He has a whole different explanation of what the symbolism could be. And Rav Hirsch has a whole discussion here that it can't be the classic Shvua in that kind of sense. And rather, it's an instruction to the Shemayim to do his bidding. This is his way of saying, I am telling the world to follow what I tell them to do. And that's with the reference of pointing to Shemayim. Okay, the Ramban has a comment here, which this is good for some synergy. It basically connects last week's Shishi to this week's Shishi. And again, we've just seen trends like that throughout. So there's definitely some helping hand to our structure here. So the Ramban comments that all of these promises in Hazinu and all these predictions, Ramban says that even if this was just some poet written by some guy, even if it's just some poem written by some poet, we still would believe it because we'd see that these things have happened. And then he says, of course, we believe in God because we have Emunah, but even if this were not coming with that context, we'd believe it anyway because we see that it's actually played out. So, Simcha Zissel Broyd in the Slum Derech, so he says he thinks this is coming from last week's Shishi. So if you remember, Shishi and Vayelech, right, so the Torah says the bad things are going to happen, right? It was just a few days ago that we spoke about this. And it's just 3 days ago we spoke about this. That the bad things are going to happen. V'yonsa hashira hazos lefon of leid. Right, this shira will come as a testimony. So he says that's what the Ramban is getting at. That the description of events and predictions that you find in this aliyah means that this shira hazina will be a testimony to the truth of God's statements about the world. So even if we didn't have Emuna, we would have reason to believe this because of how history has played out. But of course, that's not really where we're coming from as a vantage point. So what does it mean? The rest of the pasuk, Chai Anochi, V'amarti Chai Anochi Le'olam, I live forever. So here, Rav Hirsch has a very interesting linguistic analysis. He says that there's a difference between Ani and Anochi when God uses those words. That Ani is the personality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is separate and distinct from everything. And Anochi is the personality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is all-encompassing and embracing of the world. And therefore, if you contrast this to the end of the previous Aliyah, the end of Chamishi in Hazinu, so the Pasuk says, Ru ata ki ani anihu, v'ein Elohim imodi, ani amis v'achiyah, so basically the message is you're eventually going to realize that there's nothing else besides God. God is distinct from everything and not comparable to anything else. And then you'll come back to him. So now this pasuk is Anochi, is the reference to God as a all-embracing personality. Okay, and then the pasuk says in Shanosi Barak Harbi, V'secheiz b'mishpat yodi ashiv narkam l'tzaroi u'l'misanoi ashalem. So I will sharpen my sword, my glittering sword, and my hand will hold on to judgment. I'm going to visit vengeance on my enemies, and those who hate me are going to pay the price. So that's a bad action for those who haven't been so nice to the Jews. And that's the idea of the next pasuk as well. Ashkir chitzai midom. I will basically make my arrows drunk with blood. B'charbi sochal basar. My sword is going to eat flesh. Dam chalal v'shivya mirosh paros oyev. The blood of those who have been killed and of the captives and the heads of the wild bands of the enemy. So, again, pretty intense predictions here, how the world's going to pay a price for how they treat Jews.
How does that fit in with God that's killed Rachel Buchanan?
He's Rachel Buchanan for the people who deserve it, or even more than that, even people who need an extra step, I guess, because the pasuk says, but the people who have wrought terrible destruction in the world and who have slaughtered Jewish people and who have killed innocent captives, the pasuk here suggests, so God will defend them by extracting punishment on them. So that's the question in general, how exactly the nature of tshuva works for Mosolo and for Israel. Here he's saying he's basically only going to defend the Jewish people through this action. And then the last pasuk here, Harninu Goyim Amo, So all of these words, just like the whole rest of the Aliyah and the Parsha, are subject to a lot of different translations, but basically saying that the nations of the world, Harninu, they should celebrate, they should rejoice, because God will ultimately reward those who were good to the Jews, and vice versa. And the nation will make a kapara for the land. So what exactly does that mean? There's a lot of interpretations there, a lot to suggest. Refresh comments here also that this is directed to the nations of the world. It's a recognition of the fact, which certainly has played out, that even though the Torah was given to the Jewish people, but that its content would become known to the whole world, and that therefore the message would get out that if you want to survive and you want to see bracha, so you should treat the Jewish people well, and that that's also what this means, v'chiper admaso amo, that through good treatment of the Jewish people, that will atone for the world, that will essentially justify the world's existence. The Gemara in Maseches Ksubis and Daf Kufir Aleph also has a drasha here, which is really the source for the idea people have of being buried in Eretz Yisrael, people who die elsewhere, and I know it's a very common practice to be buried in Eretz Yisrael regardless of where you lived your life. And the Gemara says that that represents the idea that there's a kapara with the Adama, and that one who is buried in the ground of Eretz Yisrael is like being buried in the ground of the Mizbeach. And since the Mizbeach, we know, brings the kapara, so too Eretz Yisrael brings kapara as well. And so again, that's an Indian that many have held on to be buried specifically in Eretz Yisrael with reference to this pasuk. Okay, so just in the next few minutes, maybe just to say a few words about Shishi of Azos HaBracha. So again, it's this an opportunity we can't pass up because this is our Shishi year. And the Shishi of Azos HaBracha, I'm not going to go through it pasuk by pasuk, but it has also a unique halachic significance. So just like Hazinu as a whole has a status which is really different from the whole rest of the Torah, so too the Shishi of Zos HaBracha also has a unique status, because first of all, Shishi is the end of the Parsha as opposed to every other Parsha in the Torah where we go to Shvi. But here Zos HaBracha is not read on Shabbos, is read on Simchas Torah, so this is as much as we're going to get of the Shishi. And the end of the Torah has a unique halachic status. It's a topic I'd spend a lot of time talking about, but I'll try to say in just a few minutes. So it's a major machlokus how to understand these last psukim. Because what's challenging about the last day of psukim of the Torah? Moshe dies, and then there's still 8 more psukim. So he keeps on writing. Now, maybe nowadays we wouldn't be so surprised, because we know many Gedolim keep on writing Svarim after they die in the past century. But back in the time of the Gemara, that was considered surprising that Moshe Rabbeinu could die and keep on going, keep on writing. So how did these last 8 psukim get written? So the Gemara Menachos and the Gemara in Bava Basra have machlokas about this, that according to one opinion, the last 8 psukim of the Torah were not written down by Moshe, but instead were written down by Yehoshua. So that's a fundamental difference from the rest of the Torah. And according to the other opinion, no, you have to say that all of the Torah is written by Moshe. And therefore, you have to assume that he wrote these last 8 psukim too, and he wrote them bedema. So what exactly does that mean, bedema? So instinctive translation is that he wrote them with a tear in his eye, because they predict his death. So he wrote them Ruach HaKodesh, but it's kind of a depressing subject. So he wrote them down in a emotional state with a tear in his eye. The Vilna Gaon and the Ramami Panu have different interpretations of this. where they say that Dema actually is not spelled right to mean a tear, and it's Miloshin Demai. Demai is, you know, the Truma mixed in with Teva. It's a mixture that the Torah was all written clearly except for these last eight psukim. When Moshe wrote them, he wrote them in a mixed up way because they were not yet true, and then they became clarified. And so some explained that really these are not two different explanations. They're the same thing, that Moshe wrote them and Yeshua wrote them. Moshe wrote them in a illegible way, and then Yeshua came and wrote them in a legible way. So maybe it's two opinions, maybe it's one opinion. So we don't know exactly. But the Gemara says that in any event, these psukim are different, and therefore they have a different halachic status, which we'll talk about in a second. So this whole idea that there's something special about these eight psukim has a lot to say. We'll just mention quickly. First of all, there are some who want to say, based on this Gemara and the comment of the Maharsha, they want to have an understanding, which I think is probably a dangerous misunderstanding, that you're allowed to lie in writing. B'ksav. So this is an opinion that maybe certain journalists have adopted the halacha, but it's, I think, a misreading. And basically, the Gemara says that the rest of the Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer, V'Moshe Omer V'Kosev. God would say it, and Moshe would say it, repeat it, and write it down. And the last day of Psukim, Kadosh Baruch Hu Omer, V'Moshe Kosev B'Dema. So he'd write it down with a tear, or however Dema means. So how come it doesn't say Moshe Omer V'Kosev? Why didn't he repeat it? So Marsha says he didn't want to say it because it's Mechzik Hashikra, because it looks false, because it wasn't true yet. He was alive. So therefore he didn't want to say it. So some read that Marsha to say, oh, okay, apparently he can write it, but he can't say it, so you can write Sheker as long as you don't say the Sheker. That's a very dangerous position to take. Pashtus, what the Marsha meant, is very clear. He's saying that, first of all, it wasn't actual Sheker because it was a true prediction. It just looked like Sheker because it wasn't currently true. So it looks false. So Moshe didn't even want to look like he was saying something that true. But that appearance, which was, again, different than actual Sheker, but that appearance only applies to speech. Because when you're saying, okay, I'm dead and I'm not dead, so then that looks false. But when you're writing your will, oh, if you're reading this, I'm dead by now. So we understand that you're talking in the tense of when the person's reading it. So you write something down when the newspaper's printed last night and it says on it Monday, because it knows people will be reading it on Monday. So it's not checker that they wrote Monday when it was Sunday, because they know it's going to be read on Monday. So that's not even Mechzik Hashikra. So that's what he means, that because Ksav is meant to be interacted with at a later date, so then it doesn't even have the appearance of Sheker, but not that actual Sheker, you could say Ksav. But in any event, the question is, what is this unique halachic status? So the unique halachic status is Yachid Kari Osam. The question is, what in the world does Yachid Kari Osam mean? So there are at least five or six or more interpretations in the Rishonim. I'm going to run through them very quickly because of short time. But some of them openly contradict each other. So among the interpretations are that you can't break up the Aliyah, that it has to all be one Aliyah. Other Rishonim understand that you can't read it by itself. You have to read it together with extra psukim before it. And that somehow these reflect unique details about this Aliyah. Some of the Rishonim say that instead of having a Balkore and an Ole read together, so here you should have, or having a Meturgaman, different version of Rishonim, so here you should only have one Balkore, Yachid Kari Osam. Tosfos Menachos quotes that view and argues on it. And particularly interesting in the topic of a lot of discussion is the view of the Rambam. That the Rambam says, Yachid Kari Osam is an idea that you don't need a minion. And read this without a minion. So the Ravid gets upset about this. The Ravid follows among the other views that we mentioned. And the Ravid says that he doesn't think this is the correct interpretation, but also he says, why would this come up? What happened to the minion? So it's a little bit of a funny question, because first of all, maybe there was no minion in the first place. So that could be the answer. But secondly, What do you mean, a tzibur l'heichan holchu? I mean, the Ravid is very holy. Maybe he never walked out of a Kriyas HaTorah, but it's certainly imaginable that people could leave. And if it's ever imaginable, it's imaginable on Simchas Torah, right? That's what's going to happen, right? So people got there earlier, then they went off to make Kiddush or whatever, and they disappeared. So you had a minyan starting, and now you don't have a minyan, so... that's so impossible to imagine. So later Achronim explained that he's talking about something else. He wasn't so naive or so holy that he couldn't imagine people leaving. What he meant was that there is a din in Shulchan Aruch that if you start with a minyan and the minyan leaves in the middle, you can still continue. So therefore what he was saying is that even in Timsi Lomar people left, so didn't see Bor Lehechan Holchu, that the minyan status would still continue to persist even if people left. So why would it come up that you would need a heter to read this without a minyan? It would be relevant to every other Kriyas HaTorah as well. So Achronim give different explanations as to what the Chiddush would be even within that. But the question again is why the Rambam says that you don't need a minyan. And Rav Soloveitchik had an explanation which is complicated, but just to boil it down to its gist, that seems to be that this is reported different ways by different Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, which also is complicated, but at least one version of what he said was that the idea of a minyan by Kriyas HaTorah is not because the Dover should be Kedusha, but rather it's to evoke the experience of Har Sinai. And therefore, the rest of the Torah that was given by Maimon Klal Yisrael needs a minyan. But these last eight psukim don't require a minyan, because they weren't given in that same context of Rabbi Maimon Klal Yisrael. Okay, hi.
Is that the same idea with that the Rav says that Kriyas HaTorah is like a chiyuv of the tzibur?
Maybe. I don't know if it has to necessarily connect. The truth is, that view that it's a Chovas HaTzibur is the view of most of the Achronim, and the Rav seemed to hold it less, because Reb Chaim viewed it as a Chovas HaYachid, and he was makrit to make up Kriyas HaTorah if he missed it. And Reb Soloveitchik himself followed that position also, which was an unusual view. Most don't assume like that. Most assume that it is a Chovas HaTzibur, and then if you miss it, then it's not your obligation to make it up.
But I used to drive from Boston
he held
to get into Kriyas HaTorah in YU.
Right, which means he held it as a Chovas HaYachid. That's the point. That he felt it was his own personal responsibility. He didn't drive to YU to get the minyan. It's because he was coming to YU, he missed the minyan in Boston, and then he would have a Kriyas HaTorah in the afternoon when he got here, because he held, like his grandfather, Reb Chaim, that it's a, but the more common view is that it is a Chovas HaTzibur against this, and said that the Rav's maternal grandfather was a rebellious prisoner of Eliyahu Feinstein, that he said to the young Rav Soloveitchik, he said, you tell your other grandfather that the Ramban and Megillah is against him. Ramban and Megillah seems to say clearly it's a Chovas HaTzibur. You might be thinking of the Chazar Sashat, it's a Tfilah HaTzibur, but in any event, so just to mention quickly, there's one more view in the Rishonim, which is actually the one that's closest to what we do the halacha. Right? So which of these actually shows up in our practice? So it's the view of the Mordechai. The Mordechai says Yachid is Yachid HaMiyuchad, that it should be somebody who is distinctive, and that that's the idea of Chasin Torah, that the Slash Aliyah should be given to a Talmud Chacham, should be given to a person of stature. So there's an interesting discussion in the Kli Chemda, if you want to take a look. It's a good Dvar Torah you can give over the course of Yantif, if you want to take a look here. The Kli Chemda over here in the end of his Osa Bracha, so he writes that the Chacham Tzvi in his Shuvas asks on this Mordechai that it seems counterintuitive. The whole point is that however you understand these last eight psukim, Moshe, Bedamo, Yeshua, whatever it is, this is a lower level than the whole rest of the Torah. This is a chisarim. So why should it be that this should be the most chashuv aliyah, this should be the least chashuv aliyah to give in the entire Torah? So the Kli Chemda has a whole mahalach about how that's the whole point, is that we shouldn't have a chalisha sadas and say, okay, Moshe is dying here, that's it, the Torah is over, there's no tradition anymore, and we're stuck. But we want to emphasize that Moshe's tradition lives on through his Talmidim, so to speak, the Talmidei Chacham, Shebechol Dor V'Dor, who carry the tradition of Moshe Rabbeinu, so that keeps it going, and that therefore we have this we have this minig to see this aliyah davka as the most chashuv and to give it to Eliyachid HaMiuchad in order to make that point. In that Kli Chemda, he also has another interpretation of the minyan idea, and he says that the idea of not having a minyan maybe is actually a siman of chashivus, that the minyan is there to evoke the Shekhinah, and that we normally need a minyan for that purpose, to bring the Shekhinah to the Kriyas HaTorah. But here, since, as we said before, Moshe didn't repeat it, so the last day of Pesukim, we get directly from the mouth of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. So therefore, the Shekhinah, so to speak, is preloaded in these Pesukim, so maybe that's the Rambam's position, that we don't need a minyan. I just got out of time, I'll just mention, I saw in a contemporary sefer, Shaila Halacha L'Maisa, about this. Just also shows the crazy fish bonus people have, and about a minyan in Eretz Yisrael, where there was a whole fight about this guy who wanted Chasson Torah, and the people started leaving, and it was a Hashkama minyan, some whole story. So L'Maisa, because of the whole fight, so people started leaving, and then they were left without a minyan by this point. And the person who wanted Chasson Torah, so he said he's Temani, and he follows Rambam for everything, so he wants his aliyah, even though there isn't any minyan anymore. So there's a shuv about this. And of course it's ironic, because okay, if he holds like the Rambam, then he doesn't hold like the Mordechai, so then it's not a chashuv aliyah anyway. So again, it's the cheshbonus that we make for kavod. You see how sometimes they are a little bit self-contradictory and don't make sense. So the real message is ain't kavod ala Torah. We shouldn't be seeking them out the different ways to mechaber ourselves, but rather to honor the Torah. That's really what the Simchas Torah is about, and it should be Kodesh Baruch Hu as well, that we should have a successful Yom Kippur, a successful Sukkot, a successful Simchas Torah. We should get Kapara and Slicha and everything we need to start a new year with energy, with commitment, and with a perspective that will allow us to have a very successful Zman when we pick up again after Simchas Torah. I wish everyone a wonderful Yom Kippur. We look forward to seeing you then.